We're going to talk for the balance of this half hour about the area that used to be known as manic depressive disease, is known now as the bipolar disorder. It's an area that has been difficult for people to understand because it has so many different facets, and it affects women and men differently. It's an issue that many families wrestle with in our communities today, both in Canada and the United States and other parts of the world. But tonight, the public can hear a renowned speaker on this via Skype, beginning at 7:30 at the Woodward Room in Begbie Hall here in Victoria. He's going to be talking about this whole question of bipolar and why there are differences between men and women in this area and how it affects the whole state of not just the individual but the family as well. We're talking about a renowned psychiatrist from Akron, Ohio. He is Dr. Roger Sparhawk. He's affiliated with the International Society of Bipolar Disorders and the author of Calm Seas, The Keys to Successful Treatment of Bipolar Disorder. He's joining us on the phone line today from Akron, Ohio. Good of you to take time out of your day, doctor, and welcome here to CFAX 1070 in Victoria. Good of you to take time.
Hi, Terry. Good to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Let's take a look at some of these areas of the labeling that's gone on in the world of mental health for so many years. So many of these labels now have been just thrown out the window because they don't really mean anything. Talking primarily about bipolar, and it used to be known as manic depressive disease, and people, they say, who are schizophrenic, that's no question that the disease exists, but the problem is it's not everybody, and it's sometimes totally misdiagnosed.
There are lots of problems with diagnosis. The old term manic depressive illness was later switched to bipolar disorder a couple decades ago.
Right.
And that's what we're describing it as now.
What are we talking about when we use the term bipolar? What is it that you see in this? And you've been dealing with this for over 30 years. What are some of the key symptoms that we're dealing with here? And why is it different between men and women in some cases?
Well, the essence of this disorder is changes in activation states. That is energy and activity. And in order to have bipolar disorder, you have to have manias or mixed states, which require, manias are overactivation states, where folks are doing too much, talking too fast, not sleeping, perhaps more boisterous than usual, more irritable, or more engaging than usual. And it's just a stark departure from their normal selves. And it has to last for a few days in order to qualify. Now, you asked also about differences between men and women. I think the most striking one that comes to my mind is that we're vulnerable to hormonal shifts, setting off mood episodes.
Right.
And so when young lads hit puberty, they may be at greater risk. When young ladies hit puberty, they're at greater risk. Women during pregnancy and postpartum are at greater risk.
Mm-hmm.
And then women, certainly when they hit perimenopause and menopause, are at greater risk for having episodes.
Is there anything specific within this disorder that stands out that would be very obvious to a person who is not a clinician and is not a psychiatrist?
I think one of the most obvious features of this is sharply decreased sleep. So one of the common features of mania or mixed states is folks sleeping 3 to 6 hours or less. And if folks are sleeping 2 or 3 hours less than their normal amount of sleep for days or weeks at a time, that is a major concern.
What kind of chemical changes, though, do you see in the body and within the brain that would cause this? Is there anything there that's very specific?
I don't think we've come to the point where we can say there's anything that's that specific. Aside from the hormonal changes that I just mentioned, there are various hypotheses about what's going on in the brain. For instance, is there too much dopamine during mania and too little dopamine during depression, for instance? But I don't think these are very well pinned down as yet.
When we take a look at the high degree within the North American continent right now of people who suffer from what they would call acute depression, is acute depression a symptom or is it a condition of being bipolar?
Well, it really depends, Terry, on whether these folk at any point during their life have had a definite manic or mixed episode lasting 4 to 5 days or more. Acute depressions can be part of major depressive disorder, which can be very similar to depressions in bipolar disorder, except that there's no history ever of having had a distinct manic or mixed episode.
So an individual then who you say would be a hyper in some of these areas, that would be a possible condition of being bipolar, but they would be hypermanic and that the manic state would last for a few days. Would it give you the impression almost as if they're on some kind of a drug or some kind of a energizer?
Yes, they could appear to as if they were on stimulants or if they had way too much caffeine or crack cocaine or cocaine or something of the sort.
Now, is that something that is coming from the body itself and through the brain with a chemical change in the brain, or do we know at this stage how it begins and manifests? manifest itself?
It's internally generated, and it happens inside the body and brain, although it can be induced. If you take external chemical stimulants in particular, you can set off episodes, more so in those with genetic vulnerability. But if you give enough, you can trigger manic episodes or other psychiatric disorders with enough drug.
How did you, as a doctor of medicine and a psychiatrist, get interested in the study of bipolar?
Well, in the 90s, I had a special interest in depression and treatment-resistant depression.
Right.
And I was silly enough to let that be known, and so my colleagues started referring me folks with treatment-resistant depression. And a noteworthy thing was that after I examined them very carefully, I found that about a third of them had treatment-resistant depression because it was previously undiagnosed bipolar disorder, which requires a totally different approach to treatment. So I then ended up becoming a specialist in bipolar disorder initially in self-defense and for the benefit of my patients. But over time, I became fascinated with it and found I could do even more good for that group because the effective treatment methods for bipolar disorder are less widely known.
Can you tell us this as to whether anything within our environment or diets can cause, at least give symptoms of being bipolar, and in effect, it's not true bipolar?
Not to my awareness, unless it would be something that mimics the stimulants, then that would be risky. There is a very important environmental factor, however, and that is the sleep-wake cycle.
Okay.
And it turns out that bipolar disorder is generally viewed as a disorder of mood, but the last several years I've studied it, I've found it to be more a disorder of activation and the sleep-wake cycle. And so anything that throws the sleep-wake cycle out of whack is likely to set folks into mood episodes. And so protecting the sleep-wake cycle is a key factor in what we do.
Can you control bipolar or assist in it in any way by serotonin, by melatonin, things of that nature?
Melatonin may sometimes be of benefit if it's effective for folks in helping them protect the sleep-wake cycle. For instance, if they have difficulty falling asleep and the melatonin's effective for them in getting them to sleep so they can stay on a regular day schedule, the day shift in general, if it helps them stay on the day shift and keep their sleep and wake in the right places, why then melatonin may be a benefit in some folks. Another thing is fish oil has been shown to
fish
be
oil.
Effective and helpful.
You mean like omega-3?
Yes, just over-the-counter fish oil, 1,000 to 2,000 milligrams a day, has been shown to help.
Any idea why?
No. You're going too far for me yet. Yeah, they haven't figured it out beyond that I know.
I've spent some time on the air with Dr. Lustig, who is the man who is really going after the sugar industry, and he has described in many cases some of his younger patients that are high on just sugar itself, within orange juice and candies and so on and so forth, and said that you'll find that some people will really ramp up their activity and almost into a manic state.
Some kids certainly get going fast when they do too much sugar. It's not advised.
Is bipolar disorder a lifelong and disabling condition, or can it be controlled with the kind of medications that are available today?
In my view, it does appear to be a lifelong condition, but in my view, it's extremely treatable. And that's what prompted me to write the book and to pick up speaking opportunities and go to Vancouver, as I will in June, for speaking opportunities, because in my experience, it is extremely treatable. Yet the effective methods are not widely publicized.
Can you tell me this then, if we're looking at it, is this a condition that you would find now as a psychiatrist, starting at a very young age and then exacerbating as you gain years?
In the careful epidemiologic studies, they found that about half the cases begin by age 19. So about half of them are childhood onset now. And the thing that's remarkable, the disorder seems to progress over time unless it's effectively treated. It seems to progress. But the thing that's remarkable is that childhood onset cases start with a bang. They start more rapidly progressing than the later onset cases. So it's very important to identify them and treat them as soon as they can be correctly identified.
Give us a couple of the obvious conditions and the obvious symptoms that you would see in bipolar with a man and with a woman. What is it that you would see? How would it set itself apart?
Aside from those periods of hormonal shifts like postpartum or menopause or perimenopause or puberty, the differences between men and women may just be similar to the differences between men and women. But the things that we're looking for that are really striking, that are really obvious, that people can spot in their friends or family or neighbors, may be periods of considerable or striking sleeplessness.
That's it.
marked increases in activity, irritability, or euphoria, or impulsivity, high-risk behaviors, that sort of thing. Those kinds of things are the striking things that stand out and should call people's attention.
And if the condition goes untreated, give us the worst-case and best-case scenario here.
Well, the essence of the progression appears to be from simple up episodes and down episodes into more rapid cycling up and down, and then what we call mixed states, where folks have both overactivated symptoms and underactivated or undermotivated symptoms, either simultaneously or within a short period of time, within a matter of days, so that the illness goes from being simple ups and downs to being more complex with mixed spells and more abrupt and rapid and unpredictable cycling.
Any evidence that the utilization of illegal drug, cocaine, marijuana, whatever it may be, can trigger or can cause any of these episodes, or overuse of alcohol?
Stimulants, it's pretty obvious that stimulants can trigger manic or mixed episodes.
Right.
With the down substances like alcohol, these are often used by folks when they're going through an overactivated manic or mixed state. They're often used by folks in an attempt to quiet the racing thoughts and the distractibility and the impulsivity and the drivenness and the insomnia. So downs are often used in an attempt to self-treat.
Interesting comments. And your talk tonight, how long is your Skype talk this evening?
I've been told it's on the order of an hour, hour and a half, with a good bit of that time dedicated to question and answer.
So there will be a Q&A at the end of that.
As well as some interspersed.
What's your advice to people right now who may be suffering from the disorder or have people within their family and their children that have the disorder?
I think getting professional evaluation is a very good idea. And I honestly don't know the circumstances in Canada, but in the U.S., it's probably important that they go to see a psychiatrist, because our GPs or family practitioners or
right.
internal medicine doctors generally aren't trained in dealing with bipolar disorder. And so it's important to get specialty and sometimes even subspecialty help. So I sometimes get folks referred to me as a bipolar specialist by people who are concerned. As I said, my concern is the awareness of the effective methods is not widespread enough. It's not received nearly
right.
the attention, for instance, that regular depression has.
Listen, I really appreciate your time today, Doctor. Thank you so much for spending it with us here in Victoria on CFAX 1070, and all the best on the talk tonight.
Thanks very much, Terry.
Dr. Roger Bye-bye. Sparhawk, psychiatrist at International Society of Bipolar Disorders, giving a talk tonight at the Begbie Hall, the Woodward Room, 1900 Richmond Street, at 7:30 via Skype.